it's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate, and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Hey, I'm Matt. I'm from Woodbine. I'm here in Ridgewood, Queens.
And I'm Maria, and I'm also from Woodbine in Ridgewood, Queens, and I live in Bushwick.
How would you say that past cycles of struggle and revolt in the New York area, I'm thinking of, you know, Occupy Wall Street, of course. We're going to talk about Occupy Sandy in a bit, but also the Black Lives Matter movement in response to the murder of Eric Garner. How have all these things in the past really influenced kind of Woodbine as a project coming together, would you say?
I mean, I think a lot of us at Woodbine met each other through those movements that you mentioned, and if not literally met each other, like really got to know each other much better through participating in those movements. Especially Occupy Wall Street was really big, and Sandy, the hurricane, like you mentioned, they were really formative in our kind of historical narrative or mythology or whatever, and thinking about politics and organizing ourselves. You know, Occupy Wall Street was a response to the 2008 financial crisis, albeit a bit delayed by a couple of years. And, you know, the Hurricane Sandy was obviously, you know, this big catastrophic thing that no one had anticipated. So seeing in response to those two movements or those two kind of historical events, how people configured themselves and organized themselves, where they applied themselves, how they devoted their attentions and energy. That's really where we really got to know each other as people or political actors or whatever, and really form friendships and relationships out of those experiences. And that was really the core of what became Woodbine in early 2014, was out of those two things. And, you know, now maybe we can talk about that a bit later. But now we have another kind of historical event, and it's another kind of opportunity to meet people, you know, literally meet new people, but also, you know, meet people we knew already, but see how they really try to rise to the occasion and really meet the crisis head on. And, you know, these are these historical formative moments that are really important in political processes and projects.
For me personally, it's I know that Woodbine really came out of a lot of the coalescing of folks doing mutual aid after Sandy. But for me personally, at the time, I had felt almost like a little alienated by it. You know, I had been hearing stories from friends that were volunteering of like help being given in unsolicited scenarios, or like people positing themselves as like knowledgeable and qualified in positions of skilled labor, like demolition or whatnot. And, you know, like this kind of, occasionally at times like performative action. And it was really Woodbine for me where I was like, oh, these people have this shit together. And, I had never really seen a space manifest like that, that was, so to speak, against the end of the world. And for me, this very like deliberate, very thoughtful mutual aid that was going on here, even just like internally with Woodbine, you know, I'd been hanging around the space for like a year or two. And then, you know, several years ago at this point, Matt asked me, you know, would you like to be like a more prominent part of this project? And I think really thinking consciously, really interacting with the community, the aid being mutual, right? Like really asking like what is needed here? Like how do we, you know, with this like increasingly evident pretense of establishment and government, like they don't take care of us, we take care of us. So how can we take care of each other? It's a very simple question, but also, you know, like a critical one, especially now that this other, you know, this just next historic crisis is occurring. I don't know. I feel the way that mutual aid manifests at Woodbine, for me, it's like it's a game changer.
Let's talk about Occupy Sandy real quick, specifically, both as an event and also something that brought people together in a mutual aid project. I feel like we've referenced that, and I'm sure we'll reference it again. But let's just talk about, you know, what happened and what was the response broadly on this program. We've talked about things in the past. We've had people on talking about Common Ground after Katrina. But let's talk about Occupy Sandy, because we really haven't had a chance to do that on this show yet.
I think one of the things to think about with Hurricane Sandy is the Occupy movement in New York City started in September of 2011. And really the peak or climax and simultaneous end of it was May Day of 2012. Everything was really pointing towards that, you know, around the winter of Occupy, people really decided to focus on this idea of a general strike for May 1st and really orient everything towards that. So once May Day happened, there was a big deflation because people really didn't know where to go. There wasn't an occupation anymore. You know, whatever happened on that day happened. But at least in New York City, there was really, it really felt like the movement had kind of run its course. And the Hurricane Sandy is just 5 months later. You know, it was, I think it's in October of 2012. So just to kind of give a sense of the context and the background and the time frame, there was a kind of big depression about not really knowing what to do within that movement anymore, within Occupy Wall Street. And people had really passed through a really intensive experience, as I'm sure you know and people know. And then for that depression and confusion to be met by this hurricane, which is really one of the biggest natural disasters. You know, I'm from New York. Maria's from New York as well. Like one of the biggest natural disasters that I can remember in recent memory, or if not our lifetime, was totally, you know, basically unexpected and unanticipated, and really caused kind of devastating damage to large parts of the city. You know, the Rockaways, which is a peninsula jutting out from Queens, Coney Island, a lot of waterfront communities, Staten Island, parts of the West Village, parts of the Lower East Side in Manhattan, you know, other parts of Brooklyn along the waterfront. So super devastating, and no one really had anticipated it. And we weren't really organized or constituted ourselves to respond to it. You know, during the hurricane, the subways and buses were shut down. There were large power outages in parts of the city and most of downtown Manhattan. There are these iconic photos of, you know, all the buildings being totally blacked out, you know, big parts of the city totally flooded. So at the time we were living, you know, those of us who started Woodbine were living throughout the city in different neighborhoods, different boroughs, you know, sometimes upwards an hour away from each other. And we were trying our best to do volunteer work out in the Rockaways, but we had to, you know, drive out there, and it was limited by who had cars and who could fit in the cars and how we could get out there. And, you know, we're really trying our best, but it was really this moment where we realized how unprepared and disorganized we were. And it was sort of out of that experience that we started to think more seriously about opening up, well, you know, a space like Woodbine and reorganizing ourselves in a denser location, like a neighborhood where we would live closer to each other, near each other. And this is, you know, one of the big historic things about how we decided to start Woodbine and move to Ridgewood together. But, you know, 9/11 itself is another reference point for people. You know, it's not a natural disaster, but for New Yorkers, you know, 9/11, you know, this current pandemic feels like a combination of Hurricane Sandy, the financial crisis of 2008, and 9/11, kind of all at once, simultaneously, in various different ways. And now, you know, we're approaching, you know, 2 months of the state of emergency, and there's not really a clear end in sight. You know, the government or, you know, private interests want to push people back into work, but it's not really ending the medical crisis, and it's not going to end the economic crisis. So aside from Sandy, I also just want to mention 9/11, you know, which is another big historic catastrophic event. You know, we were obviously younger during that, but we remember it well as this kind of trauma that New Yorkers had to live through and figure out how to live in the city together after that, you know, after something like that happens. And this really feels like that to me as well.
Situations like these really reinvite us invite us or re-invite us as they happen with increasing frequency to remap our communities. During Sandy, I mean, just like Matt said, like nobody was, you know, I had my apprehensions about, you know, how people were organizing at the time. I wasn't really sure how to involve myself, but just like everyone, I wanted to help, you know, and I had been volunteering at a bookstore on the Lower East Side for some time at the time. And I lived in Ridgewood at the time, actually. And I remember the first time I went over there after the hurricane, and I just saw signs all over Chinatown in reference to the elderly, getting food to the elderly that were on top floors of their buildings, that were unable to leave their house, that had no electricity, that heaven forbid they had, you know, electric stovetops. And I just thought, like, this is like a world that I don't ever, like, I'm not old, you know, and I have mobility. I have, you know, and you really check yourself and you check what, you know, agency you have in the matter. And you have to really, you're really put in a position where you have to see and you have to witness the ways that other people experience the city. And yeah, just like Matt said, at Woodbine, you know, we try to consider how the city is accessible, you know, depending on who you are and how we can prepare ourselves, you know, in this kind of like divide and conquer economy, especially in New York. You know, we displace ourselves over and over by, you know, larger interests, you know, like we're not displace ourselves, but, you know, we're invited by larger companies to maybe just relocate ourselves as the rent gets higher and higher. Like, how do we take care of each other? What kind of care do we all need?
One last thing I wanted to say about Sandy, just while we're thinking about it, also to kind of continue what Maria was saying or kind of relate it a bit to what's happening now, is I remember at the time during Sandy, I was living in Sunset Park, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn, kind of southern Brooklyn, which is actually along the waterfront, but wasn't damaged by the hurricane. You know, there wasn't really a lot of effect, but I couldn't take the train or bus anywhere, so I was a bit isolated or stranded in Sunset Park. But one of the things that happened in Sunset Park is one of the churches nearby opened itself up as a depot or a hub or storage site. So people could come volunteer there, and it was collecting donations for mutual aid to neighborhoods that were hit. And this was really interesting or inspiring to me, or one of the things I kind of saw or learned, that, you know, even though Sunset Park wasn't affected, the people there managed to organize something like a supply hub or a supply chain. And there was tons of stuff and tons of volunteers. And, you know, during the time, the hurricane, there was lots of money coming in. Lots of people were mailing stuff. And there was just tons and tons of supplies and materials. And even in the Rockaways, there was just so much stuff. Because normally, up until now, when you think of disasters or disaster relief, disasters are normally localized. You know, they're a hurricane or an earthquake or something that happens in one particular place or maybe a region. And this pandemic is new or different because it's national, if not global. It's happening everywhere. So the aid can't be like, oh, we're just going to support New York City, or we're just going to support Puerto Rico, or we're just going to support wherever, because we have to support everywhere kind of simultaneously. So it's harder to imagine where to direct the aid to, because it's just affecting everyone in a way, or it will affect everyone. But anyway, the Sunset Park supply hub was interesting. One of the things I really remember that was a turning point for me was people were coming in to get supplies, to get, you know, food or products for their house. But it wasn't necessary because of the hurricane. They just needed that stuff because they were struggling or kind of, you know, didn't have the money or whatever. And I remember some of the volunteers were like, would ask these families, they were like, oh, why are you coming to get this stuff? Or like, were you affected by the routine? Like, they were screening them, like if they were legitimate candidates to get supplies. And it was so shocking and bizarre and weird that, like, if people are coming into this disaster, give them the supplies. Like, why are you asking why they're here, screening if their house was flooded or not? It was totally absurd. So anyway, just thinking about now, you know, when we started doing the food pantry organizing, you know, a lot of the people coming, they weren't coming because they got COVID or they were sick. They were coming because they just needed food. You know, like when the supply chain opened initially, not everyone was sick or worried, but They just needed food anyway. And this disaster kind of makes visible the different inequalities that are already existing in our neighborhood, in our city, in our society. And they're kind of bringing them to light and making them visible. And that's a really interesting, you know, potentiality for organizing or kind of pointing all these things out.
I'm just curious if you could talk a little bit, too, about what's it been like living in New York. I feel like for those of us outside of it, it's been something that's been pointed to as this epicenter. And it just seems, you know, I mean, there's just really horrific images of people being buried and just the extent of the impact of this thing. I'm just curious if you can tell us a little bit, as yourselves living there, what has it been like to actually live through this thing?
So for me, so I used to work in production. I'm a camera technician. And I worked for an agency that was in Tribeca, and that used to be such a close commute. You know, I live on the J train. I live on a Z stop. I know a lot of people have heard of this unicorn Z train. And I used to be able to get to Manhattan in, you know, 25 minutes. And now it's just a world away. You know, riding the subway is not safe. The MTA does not make the subway safe. You can't, I mean, everything is a risk. Like, there's no hospital that's available to help you. There's no, you know, tests that you can take unless you're already at death's door. It's extreme. And the game, the name of the game, you know, is don't get sick, don't get hurt, and don't put yourself in a position where you can't take care of yourself. You know, it's like we're all, it's a plane and the oxygen masks are coming down and everyone's like, okay, well, make sure you put yours on before you put one on someone else's. But at the same time, like, you're struggling, the plane's going down, you're struggling to put your own mask on. And I think, you know, you just have to be so careful with everything. So this idea, and you start hearing the stories, you know, like people like, oh, like, my medications are ready at the pharmacy, but I'm too sick to leave. And you just, people are just scrambling to find whatever answer they can. I mean, it's not about, you know, like, stunting on Instagram or whatever, like, people, you know, helping this, that. It's really just out of a very acute need. You know, people are sick today. And you hear stories in the news. You forget the news. I mean, you hear stories from your family, you know. My own father was sick, and I haven't talked to him for many years. And I found out from, you know, the state of New Jersey, from some facility. And then we never heard anything for weeks and weeks. And you just, people are just so, people's lives are just so transient to the powers that be. And so, you know, like, up for debate or whatever. The relevance of mutual aid here, I mean, it's not like a helpful thing. It's a critical thing. It's something that would have happened no matter what, because it's, I mean, I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but it is life or death. Like, you, so many, and just like Matt said, with 9/11, you know, many people are dying. You know, many of us know family members or friends that have died, and it's extreme. And I think, you know, for now, it's very clear, you know, when all you hear is like, oh, there's not enough hospital space. There's not, you might, you know, oh, is it clean to go to the hospital? It's not even clean to go to your bodega. It's not even clean to go to your ground zero out here at the laundromat, like 15 people trying to wash their clothes. You know, it's really a tricky thing. So yeah, we're all very, I think, the desire to learn how to be autonomous, to take care of oneself, you know, suffice enough to take care of each other, is a critical immediate need right now in New York. One that many people, it's not really up for debate. It's just people trying to organize to figure out the fastest way to do that.
So let's talk about the process in which these mutual aid programs that you all have been doing developed out of the space. how did you all kind of come to a strategy or a set of projects that you wanted to work on? Or did it happen organically, or did you kind of have to really think about it?
I mean, one of the things, so to touch on a little bit what we were saying before, you know, throughout most of April, you know, in New York City, you know, you could just hear sirens, ambulance sirens or fire engine sirens going 24/7. You know, it's calmed down a little bit. But, you know, at any hour of the day or night, you know, there's just sirens taking sick people to the hospital. And you just got used to it. And it really reminded you of something like 9/11 or kind of war zone. And even still, you know, there's just helicopters flying over our neighborhoods, you know, all throughout the night, you know, starting at 11 or 12 at night, for some reason, there's just helicopters that I don't know what they're looking for, what they're doing or what they're traveling, but it really creates this eerie ambiance. You know, I remember even in Standing Rock, you know, there was just helicopters, you know, flying around, and it gives you this kind of militarized, you know, war zone feeling or setting. But in terms of the beginning of the process, you know, when Cuomo, our Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio announced these state of emergencies and started these measures of, you know, social distancing or stay at home or quarantine or whatever you want to call it, we realized that our spaces, you know, both Woodbine and Mutual Aid, Woodbine and Mil Mundos, couldn't function, you know, like they were normally functioning as sort of event spaces, meeting spaces, organizing spaces. But precisely because of this legacy from Hurricane Sandy and Occupy Wall Street, we realized that we had all this knowledge and experience that we wanted to try to put to use. And a lot of people were, of course, couldn't work. You know, they were unemployed. You know, both myself and Maria had to stop the kind of work we were doing. So we also had all this time on our hands. So we started trying to think immediately about what could we do? How can we transform the space? And like I said before, I was thinking about the Sunset Park kind of supply hub that happened during Sandy. And I was like, you know, we should do something like that with Woodbine. And one of the partners that became a huge partner for us is Hungry Monk, which is this homeless outreach organization that is based in Ridgewood that normally, you know, before the pandemic was operating a weekly pantry on the street. You know, they would distribute food and serve hot meals just on Myrtle Avenue at a popular intersection for, you know, homeless people or people who just had food insecurity. And some of us have been volunteering with them before for a couple of years now. So they started actually first right away on March 10th. So just a few days. And this is before people really had a sense of how bad it would be. You know, there's people who are still more skeptical or didn't take it seriously, but they kind of had a sense that it was going to be something. So they started an emergency daily food pantry already on March 10th. And when they started that, we thought, and we saw how many people were lining up, you know, the lines were getting huge and they were distributing food to hundreds of people a day. And we said, you know, we'll open up a satellite location to this. So then, you know, they now operate on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and we do Wednesdays and Fridays. So it gives each space, you know, days off to prep and organize and get food and process the food. And we can kind of alternate in the neighborhood so people, you know which places to go. So we started that just a week or so after they did, you know, and now it's been, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks and we've been operating this food pantry out of Woodbine. And, you know, some of this speaks to also your question before about these social movements that start, you know, like after the police killings or after the acquittals of the officers, you know, killing, you know, these people. A lot of these are spontaneous movements and it requires people to be able to mobilize and organize really quickly and adapt to new situations and have people they can call up. And this is precisely what happened here. You know, Woodbine, we did organizing around food and we had a CSA and we had dinners and we had a garden, but we were never a food pantry. So we had to kind of spontaneously transform the space physically and move the furniture and tables and chairs around and turn into a food pantry. We now have 4 refrigerators in the space. So we got all these refrigeration infrastructure to kind of help become a food pantry. And, you know, all these bags and gloves and masks, you know, had to find all these supplies to make it work. And now there's probably, you know, we probably have a volunteer corps of maybe 15 to 20 people, you know, on any given day that are helping, you know, staff, the pantry and Hungry Monk probably has another 20 or 30 people, you know, all local in Ridgewood that are kind of running these operations. And kind of like Maria said, when you were asking, you know, what does it feel like to be in New York City now? You know, I haven't taken the subway or a bus in almost 2 months. And, you know, it really localizes us to where we live in our blocks and neighborhoods where we can get to on foot. And that really changes the whole geography and the landscape of the city because, you know, we were very self-conscious about organizing ourselves in Ridgewood and building up these spaces and having all these people and friends and comrades nearby. But a lot of other people were just totally isolated and they're kind of just stuck at home in these neighborhoods where they don't know people, they don't have connections, they don't have spaces they can work out of and organize out of. And it's, I think it's really been a difference with both Woodbine and Mundos in Bushwick that we have these localized crews to organize with that, that we're able and are still able to respond and keep kind of growing these efforts.
Outsiders, this one's for the outsiders. We're nothing but an outsider. And we don't need to take over. Don't send me a seat at your table. No breaking bread with the devil. Sucking air, all you got is fables. For your cares, money, I don't need you. Outsiders.
No bosses, no money. Okay. It's not always sunny. Yep. These white boys, they life's a beach. Let's make tsunamis. The terrorism of daily life. Some competition, a lot of compromise. Back in the day, I feared my time would never come. They called us postmodern. I didn't even know what that was. They called us outsider art, a term I learned as doors slam. All that is solid melts until the day it can be force-fed. The game is to be felt, I felt, not sold. So it goes, the best poets on earth probably never read a poem. So I never got a degree and distrust anyone who say they got a monopoly on truth or bring freedom through the barrel of a gun. Keep playing Darwin's game like it's the only one. You can keep your Milton Friedman. We got Kropotkin. I don't believe my eyes. I don't believe in God. I don't believe you when you say you're going hard. They teach you how to kiss rings, how to do what you can to take things. No doubt we could paint the city black. Instead we cross each other out. So many claim to be the boss, but to take it all they are unprepared. Cause power ain't power unless it's shared. Yeah. Power ain't power unless it's shared. Power ain't power unless it's shared.
Outsiders, this one's for the outsiders. We're nothing but an outsider. And we don't need to take over. Don't send me a seat at your table. No breaking bread with the devil.
This is kind of a broad question, but I'm just curious if you can talk about what else is happening in New York, the New York area, generally in terms of mutual aid organizing. There seems to be an explosion there, just like everywhere else. But I'm just curious if you can kind of talk about, you know, what kind of projects have you seen? What does it look like? And, you know, are these projects expanding? Are they getting recuperated by nonprofits, perhaps? You know, what types of things are you seeing?
There's a ton of mutual aid work going on everywhere. That's an understatement. There are people organizing the maps of mutual aid just as work in and of itself. Mutualaid.nyc is a great example. And this website is just a map of all the different mutual aid networks that are popping up in different areas. A friend of mine that I did medic training with years ago, who is a parent, lives in the South Bronx, just started South Bronx Mutual Aid. She just, you know, she's an educator. She has a teenage son and she's worried. And there are hungry people all around her. There are people who have no money to buy food, Yeah, I mean, there's mutual aid networks going around everywhere, just like I was, to go back to what I was mentioning. It's not like everyone is necessarily galvanized. It's an acute need that is existing in every single neighborhood, you know? Just this morning, I was on a call with several mutual aid groups on behalf of Bushwick Mutual Aid Group, talking to people in Greenpoint and Williamsburg and Flatbush and Crown Heights, people in South Bronx, trying to fit people in Astoria and Long Island City, because we got wind of a catering group that has repeated overage of food every night. And now we're on this like desperate search to find places that have enough refrigeration for prepared food, let alone the bulk food that Woodbine offers with Hungry Monk, for a rapid response team, because the demand for just getting through the week is so high that the idea of this food getting thrown out on a regular basis has become an emergency. Food scarcity is a very real thing, something that people talk about on the daily here. So you get food stamps, okay, then you go to the store and there's no food. And, I think that there's an acute need for mutual aid everywhere, because nobody is getting the help that they need from any, higher kind of authority at this point. The need is overwhelming. So it's happening everywhere.
Maria, maybe could you talk about like how Bushwick Mutual Aid formed and how you like decided to collaborate or partner with the space with Mumundos and Bushwick Mutual Aid?
Yeah, definitely. We haven't even gotten into Mumundos. So Woodbine being kind of an autonomous co-working hub, last year, all of us members of Woodbine have our respective projects. The project that I was given a lot of space to launch and a lot of wisdom to launch that I'm grateful for is Mil Mundos. Mil Mundos is a bilingual bookstore and community center in Bushwick, in eastern Bushwick. It's the first bookstore east of Myrtle ever in Bushwick. Normally we curate to celebrate Black, Latinx, Indigenous heritage. We're a bilingual bookstore, so we carry a lot of titles in Spanish for the local community as well. And we have a small cafe, which gives us, in a way, exemption from closing during this time. But, a Bushwick resident, Alicia Fox, started a Facebook group, Bushwick Mutual Aid. And of course, a lot of Bushwick residents were intrigued by the idea, joined the group. And I just saw a lot of misconnections happening. And I also saw, the work that we were doing at Woodbine with, we have these spaces. What do we do with these spaces? It's not safe for a large group of people to inhabit the space. We have to radically re-envision what we do with space. The first thing that comes to mind is, okay, I guess it can be a warehouse. And it can be a depot. We think of, Matt's example of the church. If there's anything you want to use these spaces, you want to put them into action. How do third spaces in New York serve us going forward? This isn't going away. So, Mundos has a delivery window, and we asked Bushwick Mutual Aid just very simply in the Facebook group. I made a post and I checked in with my team and asked, would folks here be interested in having a depot so that you could drop stuff off and you wouldn't have to make sure that you time it right, you coordinate, that, somebody doesn't get sick, like having a space where you can drop off things to donate and where people can come to pick up masks, to pick up diapers, to pick up canned food. And it just took off immediately. And so, yes, we have the depot now as well.
One thing I would say too about like who's participating and stuff like that is it really does remind me of Occupy Wall Street, which is this combination of, activists and organizers who are already kind of working on projects, but you have a ton of new people that are just springing up out of nowhere on these Facebook groups. And that really reminds me of Occupy, where it's all these new people that were not necessarily part of groups or movement spaces or projects or initiatives or campaigns that just want to help. And it seems like a really huge opportunity in New York, the first probably since then, where there's all this new energy and new kind of desire and hope, especially from all these unemployed people. If there's maybe a third of the city or the country is unemployed, you have a lot of people with time on their hands that, you know, see this kind of disaster unfolding before their eyes and want to do something. So it's a really kind of interesting and dynamic and kind of crazy experimental time to kind of figure out how to collaborate with these people and how to make ourselves available to them, to kind of work with them or get their own skills and energies and knowledges and networks and connections to kind of coordinate all that into a kind of more bigger, potent, stronger project. So that's been, you know, super interesting. There's probably more than 100 people, if not more so, that have contacted us just about volunteering or wanting to give money, wanting to help out in the pantry. And, you know, our space isn't that big. You know, Mundos isn't very big either. You know, we can only fit, you know, a few people, you know, 4 or 5 people at a time inside Woodbine to really do the pantry organizing. But we had, you know, more than 100 people that wanted to help. So we kind of started a Slack so people could communicate with each other, not just through us or DMing us on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or emailing us, but really connect people to communicate with each other, because all these local people that don't know each other or didn't know each other before. I mean, even the people asking for help or asking for food or aid, they want to help and volunteer also, and kind of connecting them. And this is really where we're thinking about how does this process turn into, you know, an experience of self-organization within the neighborhood, or all these people coming out of the woodwork that, you know, want to help. You know, this is huge for both Woodbine and Mundos to really, you know, put ourselves out there as these local, both physical spaces, but also organizing hubs or organizing frameworks to really connect people and kind of put people in touch. You know, some people we've never met, you know, I've never seen them in my life, that are doing kind of incredible organizing work for us on Slack, you know, doing food sourcing, contacting elected officials, contacting kind of nonprofits, doing all this amazing work. You know, I don't even know if they had been to the space before, but they just kind of see this stuff that we're doing and want to jump in and participate and volunteer. And it's really incredible. And it really reminds me of Occupy, which is really this kind of similar experience where people just came out of who the hell knows where they came from, but just had all this energy and enthusiasm to participate in something.
Yeah. I think to add on to that, just what you're saying about Slack, I think there's a digital component to this as well. When we talk about what's going on in New York, I think one of the ways, the main way that Mil Mundos really got locked into Bushwick Mutual Aid work, once we became the depot, I was invited to join their Slack. You know, everyone's using Slack now for sure. And when I joined the Slack, I saw that there was a channel called Spanish, and I went into it. And the two of the main coordinators of Bushwick Mutual Aid are both Puerto Rican. And I saw that they had done something I hadn't really seen in mutual aid work before. So they set up Google Voice numbers and they did the flyers in two languages. But the Google Voice numbers were instrumental, because I think that there's just this kind of assumption that people have devices, right? The amount of emails that were coming in to this setup account from missed calls to the Spanish intake line were staggering. They were in the hundreds, and it was just these two guys just working constantly through the night, trying to field calls, trying to talk to people, trying to help them fill out the Google form help request form that we had set up, you know, just trying to hear them. And hundreds of people were just like, we're hungry. And we have not left our house in 3 weeks. We have not shopped. I am a mother of 3. I'm a mother of 4. I live with my sisters. Their kids are here. You know, the school by me doesn't run. They're not actually operating. You know, they're not giving food away. I can't access this in Spanish, or I speak Quechua dialect. Spanish is my second language. You know, like all these issues just flooding in, all this entire different layer of the map that if you're privileged enough to, you know, not interact with, that you simply just don't, you know, and for me, it was like, these are the people that are around us every day. These are my neighbors. These are the people I shop from. These are the people, you know, and the stories were just tremendous. And so, you know, we were like, we were just struggling to find how we could help, you know. Oh, okay, there are Spanish speakers. Who can help on Thursdays to, like, answer these calls, to field these, to, like, call people back? You know, like, who can help somebody with a car who doesn't speak Spanish to arrive and say, like, you know, tu alimentos está afuera, like, yo estoy afuera, like, ¿cómo te puedo ayudar? You know, like, these simple, simple tasks just to be like, I hear you and I see you and, you know, like, I'm here to help. Like, I don't know you. I'm just a person too. Like, I'm just a volunteer, but, like, yeah, I see you and I want to help. And people are, it's really like, it's a game changer, you know, the way that this digital component, you know, people talking about Airtable to manage the vast amounts of requests that they've gotten, people learning new software just so that they can handle and, you know, get a full grasp of just how many people need help, you know? Yeah, it's definitely, it's a whole new game this time around, for sure.
So I was wondering if we could talk about how you came into contact and started working with Hungry Monk.
Hungry Monk is this homeless outreach organization that's based in Ridgewood. And they were already doing pantry efforts before in the years before the pandemic. And some of us were volunteering with them. One of the big things that they had did that they did was, I think it was the fall of 2018. A homeless resident of Ridgewood passed away. He froze to death overnight under the train tracks. Right near us, right near our space, right near where we live. And they organized a vigil, a kind of demonstration, you know, vigil, for him. And lots of people kind of turned out for that. A lot of, you know, a bunch of us from Woodbine went, you know, some local elected officials went, some news media went. And, you know, it was really important that they did that. And we were really impressed with them. And that was where some of us really got to know each other much better, was being like, oh, these guys are serious and they're radical. To do this, because they really had a strong critique of how the government was responding or ignoring, or even kind of the neighborhood, the kind of local homeless population in Ridgewood. And it was then that we started to talk about or think about how could we kind of partner with them going forward. And, you know, we run a farm share out of Woodbine in the summer and the winter. And a lot of the times we have extra produce. So we started that summer, we started giving them some of the a lot of our extra produce that people didn't pick up. We would give to them so they would redistribute it in their pantry efforts. And when the pandemic started and they really started increasing their pantry organizing, that's when we really started to think about how to expand or kind of organize with them. And we opened up a satellite location for Woodbine to kind of increase their pantry efforts. And right now we function in tandem. You know, we do food sourcing together. We kind of try to do a press strategy together. We try to contact elected officials or kind of different charity organizations together. And a lot of the food or the money, it's all growing through Hungry Monk because, you know, they have the nonprofit infrastructure and a lot of the connections to really receive it. And they're in a better position to receive it. And then it kind of comes back through Woodbine through them. So it's an interesting, you know, collaboration or partnership for sure, but it really, you know, it's been working really well. And I think, you know, they're a really radical organization and a really autonomous organization. You know, they've really reacted, you know, spontaneously in a large way. And they're kind of now distributing food to, you know, four of the five boroughs in New York City, you know, to the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn. And this is a small organization. You know, they probably have two or three paid staff and, you know, maybe before had a handful of volunteers. You know, one of the interesting things about their model, they call it secular monasticism, which is a lot of the homeless kind of people that they work with, they also make them as volunteers. So a lot of the volunteers for the pantry are the people that were formerly on their pantry lines or still on their pantry lines. And they, you know, this is, you know, really them practicing self-organization and autonomy, where they've been able to build large, massive supply line scales of food. Because what happened was when the pandemic really broke out in New York, a lot of food pantries shut down because they were afraid, people didn't want to volunteer. A lot of the volunteers at food pantries are typically, you know, elderly people or people, you know, who are immunocompromised or sick. So the volunteers didn't want to put themselves at risk, or some of the other churches or nonprofits didn't want to put themselves at risk or their institution at risk. So what you had was, you know, the food need was growing and growing as the food pantry infrastructure was shrinking. And Hungry Monk is one of the, you know, a handful of organizations throughout the city that really stepped up to meet that shortage or that kind of disconnect. And now they're operating kind of citywide with really just a handful of people, a handful of core organizers and all these volunteers, and including the work of Woodbine. You know, we've become a kind of appendage or satellite of their efforts in trying to mobilize our networks to kind of facilitate and do fundraising with them, do a press strategy, you know, all of these things. And, you know, one of the things in terms of organizing right now is we need to, you know, it's not just giving out food, is we have to be nimble and kind of have the capacity and strategic vision to be able to interface with different people, you know, so that includes the people we're serving food to, but also, you know, supermarkets, food suppliers, farmers, wholesalers, distributors, different charity organizations, different nonprofits, you know, fundraising people, giving grants, you know, the press, elected officials. And this is a real skill, you know, that people have to develop or experiment with or just try to be able to kind of function at all of these different levels, you know, often simultaneously. You know, I'm sure both Maria and I we've already been on a number of Skypes and Zoom calls, you know, just today, you know, emails, text messages, Slacks, you know, at all of these different levels. And part of kind of the revolutionary potential of this moment is to have the vision, you know, to function at all these levels simultaneously and kind of, you know, think of how they can aid our own projects and visions and help us kind of really build power in the ways that we want, you know, the ways that we're doing, because all of these things are realizing themselves. Even the elected officials and nonprofits, they realize themselves that they can't meet the need or meet the crisis, and they're ashamed and they're embarrassed. So they're contacting us for help. You know what I mean? They don't know what to do. They don't know how to, you know, the neighborhood in a certain way. They don't know. So it's like they're kind of, it's this really strange, bizarre position where all these people are kind of reaching out to us at all these different spheres and levels that have far bigger budgets, you know, experience, knowledges, you know, capacities, resources. And we're just these tiny spaces with, you know, handfuls of people trying to figure out how to, you know, network and coordinate with all this stuff. So this has really been what's been happening the last 6 or 7 weeks, is trying to figure out how to become these mutual aid hubs, a food pantry, and negotiate all these different spheres of organizing.
What's it like having so many people come in to and interact with a radical space like Woodbine?
And Maria, maybe you can also talk about the scale of people coming in through Bushwick Mutual Aid. But yeah, with Woodbine and the food pantry, you know, we announced that we open up at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays and Fridays. But, you know, for the weeks now, people started to line up at 9 o'clock, so more than an hour before. And this was before a lot of us were even showing up at the space to open up and prepare. We would already see lines of people. And this is even, you know, when it's raining out. It's not just like a nice sunny spring day. It can be kind of, you know, pouring rain, drizzling gray, and people are lining up. And one of the things that's been happening recently is, you know, at first in March, you know, mid, late March, there was all this mutual aid happening. There are all these articles and news stories about what's mutual aid. And it was kind of cute. You know, it was a novelty. People were taking selfies of themselves and masks and gloves, you know, handing out food, doing deliveries. And it was kind of this cute novelty. But now we're in early May, you know, approaching mid-May, and in some ways it's less cute. And this is one of the kind of dynamics in the organizing, is the novelty is wearing off for people. You know, even with our social media posts, at first, you know, we would get tons of likes and shares and everyone loved it. They love what we're doing. They love seeing the pantry. But now it's like people are getting sick of it, you know, in this strange way. But the need is just growing and increasing. You know, the food lines aren't getting smaller. You know, we're not getting less food. There's not any need for less. There's not, you know, the need is not diminishing. And the lines are just getting longer and longer. You know, the last 3 days, each day has grown and been our biggest day. You know, on Wednesday, the line was about 4 blocks long before we even started. You know, so this is hundreds of people that are lining up And, you know, like I said, 2 months ago, we were not a food pantry. You know, no one, you know, these people didn't think of our space as a food pantry, but we started flyering in the neighborhood. We were in some local newspapers. There's been, you know, obviously our social media stuff. And just through word of mouth, people know that this is a place that Wednesday and Friday at 10 a.m. you can get food. And for us, you know, we had to figure out how to meet this scale of need and find the supply of food to kind of grow and grow, because it really feels when you give out all the food and there's still people on the line and you don't know what the f*** to tell them, and you have to look them in the face and say, you know, we have no food, and to send them home, you know, it really feels horrible. And, you know, this is something we're dealing with in terms of the food sourcing, you know, to really, you know, we have to continue to grow and also just fundraising, because some of the food, you know, we're buying, you know, Hungry Monk is buying. It's not all just donations. So we're doing, you know, fundraising. We can send a link for the current fundraiser. But one of the things we've been doing now, we decided to do is, you know, people also need more than food. You know, food is obviously an essential primal thing that people need right now. But there's other issues. You know, there's rent, there's political struggles around eviction and who has access to the stimulus payments and the aid and unemployment and food stamps and all the services, you know, health services. These are all like political questions beyond food. So we had, you know, early on, we started a website, this mutual aid website, where we had listed all these resources. But we realized, you know, a lot of the people coming to the pantry didn't read about it on our website. You know, they heard about it locally through our flyering, which we did in three, you know, in English, Spanish, and Polish. And, you know, we, the hundreds of people coming through, you know, they come in so fast, you know, because of the social distancing, we're spaced apart, and they come, they get a bag, and then they leave. But more and more, we've been trying to put people on the line, volunteers, to just talk to the people who are lining up, to check in with them, like, what's going on? What's the situation? How are you? How are you feeling? How's your family? Just to kind of get more of a sense of it. And then this week, we just launched a newsletter, a printed newsletter. We printed 1,000 copies, which lists the resource guide, which lists phone numbers for all the services, for delivery services, for food services, health, unemployment, all those things. So there's phone numbers for people to call, so it's not mediated through the internet. And in the newsletter, we also put interviews with Father Mike from Hungry Monk, with Maria herself. You know, there's interviews to talk about what's happening in Bushwick, with our friend of ours who's an emergency room nurse at the local hospital, a friend of ours who's a doctor who had to speak anonymously because the doctors are not unionized at a hospital, and from a housing organizer who's himself formerly homeless. So this was an attempt for us to kind of give people something more than food, you know, some ideas or analysis or kind of a sense of what's happening and the different types of organizing happening and different types of political questions. You know, right now we've been trying to focus on the newsletter to give people something to look at and read. And this is a way for us to exchange ideas and kind of content and think about the political struggles to come. And, you know, we right now we think we can probably do them biweekly. To do these printed newsletters, you know, to have these different information and resources. And, you know, now we're trying to put more people on the line, you know, to walk along the line when people start lining up at 9 o'clock to talk to them about exactly what's going on. But yeah, maybe Maria can talk about, you know, in Bushwick, how this is playing out.
Yeah. I mean, in Bushwick, there's just a clash of so many different people because there's so much interaction that the amount of people requesting help is so long. But I think it really it's just people learning from each other. You know, Emil Mendoza, we run Spanish classes and we got some of these beginner students putting them to work. You know, we're like, would you like to deliver groceries? Would you like some real life experience? You know, and on the flip side, you know, even some of the times that I'm able to drop off groceries and I talk to the people that we're dropping off groceries to, people tell me, you know, they're like, hey, do you know of work, or how can I help, or how can I get involved, or, you know, they have other questions. They need cash assistance, like Matt was saying, for rent. They are worried about, I mean, a major thing here in New York that you're going to see in the next month is public school systems, school years over in a month. And we don't know, you know, if you don't have a device and you're not showing up to class, like that's a very clear class and financial access delineation as to whether or not your kids are going to succeed academically. If people are being put at risk for, you know, not passing that grade or not excelling in ways that they once were because they had access to the public school system, I mean, the ripple effects of that are going to be devastating. And so the ways in which people, especially families that maybe whose MO was to stay off the radar for various reasons, are reaching out to us, it can't be understated. I mean, even at the depot, somebody called me, one of the volunteers called me the other day and put me on speaker, and the guy straight up said, like, I'm undocumented. I'm looking for work. Please help me. And, you know, people are really, you know, they want support, but I mean, don't get it twisted. Like, they want to get involved. They want to understand sustainability. Like, nobody is out here with a fetish for how rocky and how unstable and how uncertain the future is. You know, everyone is trying to find answers. People maybe that worked in restaurants, maybe people that worked cleaning the schools, maybe people, you know, all sorts of people that they don't have the same access that maybe others do to government assistance. And yeah, the different ways in which community members, I think at spaces like Woodbine and, you know, other spaces that Woodbine members are involved in around the city, the ways in which people interact with spaces like ours, it definitely feels mutual. Like, it's like, and it definitely feels like a, like, kind of, we're all striving for sustainability here, and we're all striving to take care.
On the road again. That was a reference to Cormac McCarthy. 33 still sticking, fuck the police, while the mark of the beast surrounds me through targeted marketing. Hopefully ominous, hopefully I'ma be honest with all of these zombies making a mock of reality. Humanity thicker than a meme is a revolution they've been trying to change. Please try to dream bigger than a 5-inch screen. And I fight and scream, even if they don't hear me. Never wanted to be anything better than anybody. Only want to think of possibilities for everybody getting a little more free. But we're still trapped in a prison of death because of corporate greed. That's gangster shit, keep most poor but the few stay rich. They tell me that's how it is, but I'm not believing more than this. When the captain of a strong sinking ship got locked up cause the motherfucker never snitched. Life can change so quick, grandpa's gone, then the brother had a kid. Still singing these songs, don't know how to quit. They tell me that I got a Peter Pan complex, and I'm in my middle age, not grown yet. It's over on me, settling for the least evil in the race between rats. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. With a strain at you, with broken noses, watching friends die away. Silence feels so dumb. We've lost so many times, wouldn't notice if we won. This army for me, I am a human, self-aware. Please don't ignore me, I am a human, life's unfair. One by one, we'll spill our guts. What the fuck? Burst into flames on a battlefield somewhere. But my insides are numb and I'm struggling to care. This army for me, I am a human.
superhuman, self-aware. Please don't ignore me. I am a human. I am a human. Is anything relevant? Is there anything else worth mentioning? Show me your belief and I question it. While I'm waiting for Jesus to resurrect, we're stuck in a system that we'll never represent. Most of us residents, I'm fucked in a rather tough luck of a death. Mother duck to my neck, so what? I go a little bit insane, but the dime of the living to the brain. And together rap is another bad attempt to redefine pain. Teen angst never left these veins. Guess that I can't win if I don't pay. The sting of failure never fades away, but it's all okay. David Bowie's ghost told me that we could be heroes one day. Been this way since I can remember. Really don't think it'll get much better. 35 candles, dripping on a birthday cake, and I'm still living like a damn rebel. I don't get a boss, the bullshit ready corks in the dust. I never went to Temple of Mars, I barely got a cause. I still pray for the human race in my own way. Every word, each song.
Take it all back. Wish I could take it all back. Take it all back. Take it all back. Wish I could take it all back. Take it all back. Take it all back. Take it all back.
A lot of mutual aid projects that we've talked to have reported, like you were saying, that there have been a high number of people that wanted to volunteer. Curious if you can talk about that process of bringing new people into the organizing. I think for a lot of groups, this becomes like one of the hardest things that they have to do is basically bring lots of people, sometimes even more than originally were involved in the project when it started, into the organizing. I'm just curious if you can talk about that.
I think any organization has to take people on in a responsible manner. You know, people wanting to help, I think, doesn't always look like, you know, sometimes we can give tasks like, oh, can you pick up these groceries and can you bring them to this house? You know, for example, that was something that was happening. Even with Hungry Monk and Woodbine, people were like, oh, can you deliver to my house? You know, and that's cool. But I think, you know, it caught a lot of people by surprise what it is to carry groceries for a week for a family of seven on your bike. Not many people do that. you know, mostly people are, I know certainly, like when I go on my bike to go grocery shopping, I'm shopping for a week's worth of groceries for myself. And so we think about how much labor went into that for how much yield, not to be too economic about it, but I think the process starts looking like, what are the ways in which people can help that don't require necessarily like, some sort of like direct volunteer coordination, you know? For example, I know that at the very beginning of this, there was this kind of like proliferation of resource guides and Google Sheets and, you know, reference lists and who to call. And then you would, this website popped up, it was down 3 weeks later. But I think just talking about in general what we're trying to strive for and having people on the same page, people seeing the importance of it, seeing the paradigm for what it is and what it's certainly not. The conversation is living and it keeps on going. It feels like, you know, just having spaces like this, like you giving us the space to talk about this in a public way, keeps the conversation going and it's helpful, you know? You know, all these people that sign up to help Woodbine, it's not possible to get to every single person, but at the same time, we as a space are always finding at a much faster rate than we did before, different ways in which people can really help. You know, where the definition of what is helpful is constantly being redefined. And I think a lot of mutual aid networks and a lot of spaces like ours, like Woodbine, like Mil Mundos, are finding this as well. And, you know, hence the 11-teen weekly Zoom meetings where we all share our findings or whatnot. But, yeah, I mean, it's really just expanding the ways in which people can get involved in their community, learning ways to do it autonomously, not necessarily without the guidance of a space, but rather just having the space available as a resource that is needed on a regular basis.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is, you know, in terms of the new volunteers and the new people that we're meeting just through all this work is, you know, the whole idea of apocalypse, it means revelation, you know, it's this revealing, and any crisis moment is this revealing. And you really find, you know, with the volunteers or anyone, people sort of reveal themselves who kind of show up out of nowhere. And some of them are incredibly skilled and gifted and competent and organized and can really help, you know, push things forward and do all this work. Like I was saying before, people we've never met that have never stepped foot in this space are spending, you know, a significant amount of time helping to volunteer, not necessarily for Woodbine, but just for this work, just to keep this work going. And this is a big, you know, revealing, and just in the neighborhood, the different partners that step up, that kind of try to, you know, we didn't have this close of a relationship with Hungry Monk 2 months ago. You know, we knew each other, but now, you know, it's like we're really working in tandem, and all these things sort of reveal themselves to you in these moments of crisis. You know, different people, your relationships, some of the people you thought would be really, you know, reliable comrades or organizers aren't. And other people you never expected to really step up are. And this is, you know, we're all learning this on the fly as we go. And, you know, some people, you know, they come volunteer once and maybe it's not for them. And we don't hear from them again. They don't come back. They don't show up. They're depressed or confused or whatever they're going through. That's fine. But, you know, we're having to kind of sort through and process all these different new relationships and dynamics. But, you know, it's a huge learning experience for all of us, you know, all of us involved in this. You know, we have no, you know, no one has ever been through something like this before, really. So we're all kind of learning on the fly and making it up. But I think it's a huge opportunity for us to really, you know, develop these skills and networks and connections and meet each other. And, you know, there's a ton of potential in terms of how we relate to these spaces and the neighborhood and the city going forward. You know, these supply lines of food, you know, this isn't going away. So all the things we're doing now are going to be long-term kind of components of the organizing projects we do in our spaces.
I think one of the other key things, not only what people are doing, but also just their perceptions. I mean, this is something that we really have seen take place in Puerto Rico, that people's perception of the state and just realizing that it's not coming to save them and really looking to other forms of organization in place of it. And I'm just curious, you know, since the pandemic has broken out, has there been a shift in the way that people view the state? I mean, obviously this is not a one size fits all thing, but I'm just in general, just kind of based on either your own kind of daily interactions with people or your just perceptions of the situation. Have people more so been critical of Trump or the state or, you know, Cuomo, or have they kind of like, you know, looked to people as certain saviors, or has it been a mixed bag?
I don't know how I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, given the kind of space that Woodbine is, I guess we operate through a certain filter, for sure. I want to be self-aware about that. But I think everyone's like kind of over the status quo. It seems to me, you know, you hear here and there this kind of call for normalcy, but even then it's half-hearted at best, you know, or a return to normalcy, but it's not going back, and nobody has any answers. And that's becoming painfully apparent to everyone, you know, and there's no shortcut to figuring out an answer. There's no quick road. That the work needs to be done along the way. And I think in terms of, you know, these types of traditional leaders, I think that their narratives are just so completely out of touch. They're confusing people at best, you know, like if we open up this idea of opening up on May 15th, you know, I think many people could easily confuse that with the state suggesting that things are safe to open up on May 15th. But even the state knows that and doesn't believe it. They're just doing it because of how they prioritize economy, and how they prioritize business. Even Matt, I don't know if you got this absolutely cursed text from the city the other day, but it was like, get back to work. It was like automated text from the city of New York that was like, get back to work, antibody tests available. And they're not available. Like, you have to go through so much to get this test that works, like, that has like some kind of wild fault margin, you know. And it's just like, it's, there's the people you've mentioned in leadership positions are just fabulously difficult to take seriously. Like, it's for me, yeah, I can't say I give them like too much real estate in my mental on the regular. I try not to.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing with the state is that, you know, is what does that mean, or what do you mean by that? Because there's different layers or levels to it that function in different ways. You know, New York City and New York State are primarily this democratic, you know, stronghold bastion. So, and then we have Trump, you know, this Republican, you know, president. So New York City and New York State, you know, hates Donald Trump. But then that kind of gives a boost or support to like our Governor Cuomo, because he's seen as like resisting Trump, or he's like a sensible leader, you know. So it's kind of complicated, you know, how, you know, where people's, you know, affinities lie in terms of this. But, you know, in terms of the local level, like our city council members are totally absent, you know, in Ridgewood. They're not really doing much of anything. You know, the state legislators also basically totally absent and not really doing much. So these are all moments of contradiction where groups like Hungry Monk or Woodbine, Bushwick Mutual Aid, Mil Mundos, you know, people can see them doing the work just visibly. And, you know, there's not much more material than food, you know, so it's like, you know, they see it, they want to come to us. And also in terms of the state, you know, at New York City public schools, they started distributing food at first just to, you know, children, you know, under 18. You know, a lot of schools, you could go get me, you know, 3 meals a day, you know, to take home. And then the city was also doing meal deliveries to senior citizens. But people started calling Woodbine or emailing Woodbine. I'm sure this was true with Bushwick Mutual Aid too. And they were like, the school's not open, or their meals suck, or, you know, they said they're going to bring them, but they don't, you know. So they were coming to us like, we want the food from you. Like, we don't want the food from the city. And it's tough, you know, because the city and the state have all this money and budget and resources, you know, from tax dollars to provide these services. But people, it's bureaucratic, because it's confusing to engage with how to figure out how and where to get the food from the city and the state. And then even if you do get it, you know, you don't like it. It's bogus. People are doing photo ops, you know, just to say that they're doing something, but they're not. It's dysfunctional. So all these contradictions are big opportunities for us, but, you know, there's certain scales that we can't really operate on, and that's where there has to be some kind of self-organization or pressure. You know, the big issue is rent, you know, and it was our local, you know, state senator who tried to put forward legislation for rent relief for 90 days that the governor has refused. But the governor is really popular, if we're being honest. You know, people like the governor because he stands up to Trump, or he's seen as standing up to Trump. So it's a contradiction we have to deal with. You know what I mean? That's confusing for us. And, you know, one of our Congress members also put legislation on the federal level for rent relief. But, you know, obviously, this, you know, senators are going to block it. So there's all these kind of, you know, the rent question is so existential right now, because the economy is just totally dysfunctional. You know, I've read reports that upward, you know, maybe around a third of the country is unemployed right now, officially almost, you know, not even unofficially. So, you know, how are people still expected to pay their bills, keep up with their rents and mortgages, utility bills, debts, et cetera? You know, there's some relief happening, you know, legislatively, but these kind of crises are pushing themselves down into the food insecurity. You know, that's the base level where you have to get food, you know, through, you know, either buying it or finding it somewhere. So this is where we're really stepping in. But again, that's something we're trying to do with the newsletter. And also when we're dealing with the press to try to get interviews or articles to kind of talk about these things, to kind of make visible these analyses and critiques. And these are the limits we're really functioning. And that's why, you know, one of the things we'll talk about is dual power. Is we're really trying to build up our own organizing frameworks as examples of local or neighborhood power to really kind of try to leverage or pressure some of these contradictions that we're talking about around some of these structural issues around how the economy works, how rent works, et cetera. You know, this is really what's happening now. And I think it's going to be happening for months, you know, if not years ahead.
Well, with all that in mind, where do you see things going? I mean, obviously nobody has a crystal ball.
I think that autonomy is the new name of the game. And, you know, I mean, I think in the coming months, yeah, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I think a lot of people sense that, have a hard time talking about that, because talking about it doesn't really change that. But in terms of spaces like Woodbine, you know, Woodbine's focus is entirely on autonomy. You know, for me, when I saw that there was a space of people, there's no retail model, you know, this is our co-working space. We all pitch in, pay the rent, or like less, I don't know. But, you know, we all maintain a space where we learn and work towards autonomy. And when it's not so much that you don't like the kind of help you're getting from the powers that be, but there is just a blanket deficit of that help. When you know, government administrations or social services are simply not, you know, we talk about the schools that just, they're like, dial this number to see what school near you is offering food. And people report back to us that they've texted it and it doesn't work at certain hours. Or they go to the school and the school is completely shut down. There's no operation. It's not that they're out of food. It's like there's literally no one there. You know, and then we get the report back. Oh, well, it's not every school. Okay, you put them on the map. Like, and all that time, you weren't fed. So, you know, how seriously people take these kind of city and state-offered services is going to wane. I mean, it's waning for people, you know, and the conversations are similar throughout so many homes, you know, like, oh, I'm going to start growing my own food. I'm going to start learning how to sew. I want to sew masks, like my laundromat's closed because everyone's too sick to run it, you know, or like they're scared, you know, maybe the people that own the laundromat have a kid and they're scared of, they see how busy it gets in the laundromat now that everyone's, you know, home. And it's just, A lot of standard services that were easier to take for granted are just no more. And we're all going to have to learn how to take better care of ourselves and each other in this time. And striving towards autonomy, I think having spaces, whether physical or figurative, that are visible to people. I mean, everyone's going to need somewhere to start. So I think spaces like Woodbine are going to be critical in the coming months and going forward.
Well, anything else you want to touch on that we haven't talked about yet, or perhaps any lessons that you'd leave to other people that are looking at projects like Woodbine and wanting to replicate?
Autonomy is not something you reach alone. So don't try to do all the work. definitely need good friends and comrades. And it definitely has to be a daily conversation, a regular conversation and a living one. You'll see. You slowly get there.
Yeah, definitely. I would just say to check in with, you know, your friends and neighbors and comrades around, see what's going on, what's the situation, and put yourselves out there, like on social media. You know, people made these Facebook groups or whatever, Instagram, just spontaneously, and people are flooding to contact them to help or support or volunteer, or they need things. And then you just kind of form groups out of that, you know, find a space. If you don't have a space, maybe there's a local church or community center or some kind of store that shut down or something. And maybe you can turn it into a depot or a hub and just kind of start from there. And I think things, you know, basically take on a life of their own, depending on the local situation and what the needs are and what the people are. And you just see where it goes.
Thanks for listening to It's Going Down. IGD is part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. You can check us out online at itsgoingdown.org and on Twitter at IGD_news. Subscribe to our podcast, tell a friend about IGD, and you can also listen to us on Pacifica Radio. Check kpfa.org for more info. And if you like this show and want to support us, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to give us a one-time donation or sign up to support us monthly. Until next time. This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.